The first humans arrived in the U.S. Southwest by 11,000 B.C., but possibly earlier, as part of the colonization of the New World from Asia by peoples ancestral to modern Native Americans. Agriculture did not develop indigenously in the U.S. Southwest. Instead, it arrived from Mexico, corn arriving by 2000 B.C., squash around 800 B.C., beans somewhat later, and cotton not until A.D. 400. Originally, southwestern Native Americans just incorporated some agriculture as part of their hunter-gatherer lifestyle. By A.D. 1, some southwestern Native Americans had already taken up residence in villages and become primarily dependent on agriculture with ditch irrigation. Thereafter, their populations exploded in numbers and spread over the landscape. At least three alternative types of agriculture emerged, all involving different solutions to the Southwest's fundamental problem: how to obtain enough water to grow crops in an environment most of which has rainfall so low and unpredictable that little or no farming is practiced there today. One method was to live at higher elevations where rainfall was higher, but that carried the risk that in an especially cool year it might be too cold to grow crops at all. An opposite extreme was to farm at the warmer, low elevations, but there the rainfall is insufficient for dryland agriculture. The Hohokam got around that problem by constructing the most extensive irrigation system in the Americas outside Peru, with hundreds of miles of secondary canals branching off a main canal, 12 miles long, 16 feet deep, and 80 feet wide. But irrigation entailed the risk of sudden heavy water runoff from rainstorms, digging further down into the ditches and canals and incising deep channels called arroyos, in which the water level would drop below the field level, making irrigation impossible for people without pumps. Another, more conservative method was to plant crops only in areas with reliable springs and groundwater tables. However, it then became dangerously tempting to expand in wet decades into marginal areas. The population multiplying in those marginal areas might then find itself starving when the climate turned dry again. Still another solution was to occupy an area for only a few decades, until the area's soil and game became exhausted, then to move on to another area. That method worked when people were living at low population densities. However, it became impossible at high population densities, when there was nowhere left empty to move to. One more method was to plant crops at many sites, and then to harvest crops at whichever sites did get enough rain to produce good harvest, and to redistribute some of that harvest to the people living at the sites that didn't happen to receive enough rain that year. That was one of the solutions eventually adopted at Chaco Canyon. The remaining method was to plant crops and live near permanent or dependable sources of water, but on landscape benches above the main floodways, so as to avoid the risk of a heavy flood washing out fields and villages, and to practice a diverse economy, exploiting ecologically diverse zones, so that each settlement would be self-sufficient. That solution, adopted by people whose descendants live today in the Southwest's Hopi and Zuni pueblos, has succeeded for more than 1,000 years. All of these alternatives face a similar overarching risk, that a series of good years may result in population growth, resulting in the society becoming increasingly complex and interdependent, and no longer locally self-sufficient. Such a society, then, cannot cope with a series of bad years that a less populous, less interdependent, more self-sufficient society had previously been able to cope with. As we shall see, precisely that dilemma ended on Anasazi settlement of Longhouse Valley, and perhaps other areas as well.